Dear Dhamma friends, so we have come to the next part of the mindfulness for young adult session, and that is a discussion on a particular sutta and trying to get some guidance from the Buddha's teaching. And nowadays we are discussing Kaggavisana Sutta, where Buddha emphasizes the seclusion. And again, the simile given is the horn of a rhinoceros. You know that the rhinoceros has a single horn, and that is a very strong, stable one. And Buddha give a simile that the one is maintaining his sort of stability of the mind like a rhinoceros horn. So all the verses included in this sutta are again and again emphasizing that stability and steadfastness of the mind, the unshakability of the mind. And again, the commentary mentioned that each and every verse is a theme for a Paccheka Buddha to become enlightened. And after he became enlightened, he has sort of mentioned the proximate cause, what was the reason for him to sort of have some dispassion and have some disenchantment towards the samsara, towards the typical sensual world, and to attain the Paccheka Buddhahood. And therefore, each and every verse has their own unique kind of story behind that. And today we have come to the next verse, and it is going like this. Kiddha rati hoti sahaya majje putte sucha vipulang hoti pemang. Piya vipa yogang Vijugujjamanu eko chare kagga visana kappu. Literally it means kiddha rati hoti sahaya majji. Now kiddha means spots. So sahaya majji. So when there are a group of companions, when there are people, when there are friends around, then there is a tendency to get involved in some sort of a sport. You may try to play cricket, you may try to play badminton, you may try to play tennis, football, whatever it is. So there are friends, and then when friends are come together, so someone is proposing this, let's go and play this, let's go and play this. So likewise, when there are many people around, your companions are there, so always there is something, some sort of a proposal to spend time. Especially here it is mentioned playing. Putte sucha vipulam hoti pema. And on the other hand, there is a great attachment towards one's children. Piyavipayogam vijigujjamanu. In case, if there is a kind of a deprival, or one has to be away from these loved ones, maybe one's sons and daughters, and maybe one's friends. So that becomes a great sorrow that makes one's mind really sorrowful. Understanding this, eko chare kagga visana kappu. So one is living a secluded life. Now there is a beautiful story behind this verse. And one time there is a one king called Eka Puttaka Bahmadatta. Now, Ekaputtaka is a Pali term, literally mean as one son. So this particular king, Brahmadatta, only has a single son. So you know, typically there may be several sons and daughters to the king, but in this case, this particular king only had one son. So therefore he was famous as a Eka Puttaka Brahmadatta. Brahmadatta with a single son. And he had a great love or great attachment, affection towards this son. So wherever he go, he carried this son. Suppose he is going to the park, so this son is accompanied. Whenever he is going to the court, he is with this son. And whenever he is going to any other village, kingdom, so he is accompanying this son. So he is so attached to the son, and the son is also a fairly a good person, and therefore there's a huge attachment between these two, king and the son. One day what happened was, the king went to the park, but he couldn't accompany the son. Unfortunately, while the son, the prince, was at the palace, he fallen ill and he was died. Now the ministers understood, now this is an unbearable situation for the king. So therefore, before the king is returned, so they actually did the funeral and basically they burned the body. By the way, once the king has gone to the park, he met a lot of friends and he become drunk and he was not able to get his senses. As a result of that, he couldn't remember the son. So the next day also, he was accompanied with a lot of friends and they were asking this and that, and they were trying to accompany him and make him sort of comfortable, as well as occupy him with various tasks and activities, plays, sports, etc. As a result of that day also, king didn't remember the son. So he had that much of an involvement with these companions, friends. But the next day, suddenly he remembered the son. So he asked, "Bring my son to me, I want to be with him." But then slowly ministers explain what has happened. So son has passed away, they were sort of burned him, did the funeral, and he was informed about it. And at this time, the king was really shocked, fairly shocked, because it is mentioned that the attachment towards the children is so powerful, so strong, and it may penetrate the skin, it may penetrate the flesh, and it may penetrate and go and hit the bones and bone marrow. To that level, it is so strong, so powerful. So now the king was extremely touched by the situation, but he is a wise king, by the way, and he is one with a lot of parami coming from the past, and now he is taking this opportunity to reflect. You know, there's a interesting teaching in the Buddha's suttas. I mean, there it is mentioned, once you met with a calamity, once you met with an accident or some sort of a real tragic situation, there are two options. One is that you may get bewildered. You may get really upset. You start to cry. You start to blame someone. You start to blame yourself. Completely become helpless. And ultimately, sometimes you become insane, crazy. So that is one possibility sometimes happen. There's another option. There's another possibility as well, where one starts to search. One starts to search a way out of this suffering. How to overcome this suffering? Why am I suffering? What is the reason? Is there any person who can help me to be free from this huge suffering? Now he is in search of a solution. So this is the other option Buddha mentioned, available when one is met with a really tragic situation. Now, in this case, this king is really wise, so he has taken the second approach, where he is reflecting to himself. Now, there is a tremendous amount of suffering available in the mind, and he is thinking, what is the reason? Why this suffering has come? What is the exact reason? So, when huge amount of sorrow, lamentation is available in the mind, and he understood, whenever you are born to this world, it is inevitable. You can't guarantee when things go wrong, when your loved one being separated. So therefore, till whenever you are born to this world, so you have to inevitably go through this kind of situation. So birth is one main reason to have this much of suffering, this kind of suffering. So he understood that birth is one cause. Then he didn't stop there. He is using his wise reflection, Yoniso Manasikara, to further reflect. So as he looking further and further to the source, to the root, is now questioning, what is the cause for a birth? Now, in order to have a birth, kind of a becoming, kind of a new state, kind of a state of a mind, now there should be some sort of a becoming process going on. Now there is some, kind of a mind-made state which is away from the typical present moment. As a result of that, now you are reborn into that state. So there should be a kind of a state onto which that one is reborn. So this state, this existence, what we call as bhava, is the reason for the birth. And when there is an existence, then you are reborn to that. Depending whether you have the necessary causes and conditions, necessary karma and all these reasons, and if those conditions are satisfied, then you are reborn to that state, to that existence. Therefore, this existence is a cause for rebirth. And what is the cause for the existence? So why one is going to become something else? Why one wants to go to a new state? Why the mind is inclined towards another state? So why the mind is going and attached to something else? So that is where the attachment, that is where the inclination, that is where the clinging or grasping. So the grasping is the reason in order to make an existence. So this upadana or the grasping, clinging, therefore this king understood, okay, this clinging is there. So the clinging has caused this kind of an existence, this kind of a becoming. So what is the cause for clinging? So there's a strong attachment, there's a strong grasping. How strong grasping has happened? How it has evolved, how it has developed? So now the king is further reflecting. There he understood, I have a desire, I have an attachment, I have an attachment to this sun. So that was so great, it has become very, very strong, unbearable. So now the mind has fully holding it. So this holding, strong grasping, has the cause as a great craving or attachment, a desire, affection. So the craving is the proximate cause for that kind of a grasping. Now, how the craving has happened? What is the cause for craving? Now, there he understood, while being with the child, while being with the son, so your feeling is fairly pleasurable. So he is talking in a very amenable manner. You can fondle him and he is playing, it's so beautiful and enjoying. So it is giving a lot of pleasure. So this pleasure is one cause to have craving. And on the other hand, while being with the friends, that you are playing and enjoying, and this is really a pleasurable, happy. So this happiness, this pleasure, is a cause to have a craving. So once you have some pleasure, you want to hold it. You want to have it more and more. You are getting attracted to it. You want to attach to it. So that is how the feeling has made some craving. Now, how the feeling has happened? Now the king is further reflecting. How the feeling has happened? What is the exact reason for feeling? Now, as he is looking down carefully, it is now becoming more and more difficult, more and more subtle, requires fair amount of sharp mindfulness in order to understand as we are going further and further to the roots. And there he understood there are some sort of a contact between, say, two or three other phenomena. As a result, the feeling happens. So Buddha gave a interesting simile here. Whenever we are rubbing two sticks, as a result of this rubbing, touching again and again two dry sticks, there generates heat or temperature. So that generated heat is because of that rubbing, the contact between two sticks, two dry sticks. If you simply stop rubbing and if you keep the two sticks separated, so that generated heat will dissipate. So therefore Buddha mentioned now this contact causes that heat to generate. Similarly Buddha mentioned there is a contact, as a result of that the feeling arises. I contact with the, say, sights, as a result the pleasurable feeling. I ear contact with the sounds, as a result the pleasurable feeling. So likewise, various types of feelings are happening due to various types of corresponding contact. When certain contacts happen, that causes to generate pleasurable feelings. When some other types of contacts happen, it causes to generate painful feeling. And certain another contacts happen, and it causes to generate equanimous feeling. So the determination happens based on the contact, the type of the contact. So the contact is one of the primary reasons to generate feelings. Now the king is further drilling down, further sharpening his attention, focusing his attention, how contact has happened. Now in order to have contact, you need two sights, at least. Eye and the sights, ear and the sounds, nose and the smells, tongue and the tastes, body and the tactile sensations, mind and the mind objects. So these 12 bases, sense bases, are the causes for contact to happen. When they are present, the contact happens. Now the king is further drilling down, further scrutinizing, further investigating how these 12 bases come to be. Six sense bases and their corresponding objects, external sense bases, how they come to be. Now he understood, okay, there is a mental urge, there is a mental manifestation happens in the mind. It is so subtle. At the beginning you get kind of a mental image, so there is an urge coming from that. There is an inclination coming towards that. So there is a representation of the incident incident first in the mind, and it actually motivates to implement it. Say for example, you want to enjoy with friends. Now first of all there is a desire related, and there is a mind made kind of an image appear in the mind. So you feel it is important to do it, important to implement it, and you assume that it may generate a lot of happiness, pleasure. So this kind of a mental part is again there. So this is called name and form or namarupa, and you get the kind of a very fundamental levels of feelings, perceptions, volition, and again a mental image which is actually based on certain perceptions or signs coming from the what you call the physical material aspect. Now this actually appear like a mental image in the mind, and that causes those sense bases and the corresponding sense objects to implement. Say for example, as I mentioned, you get a desire to eat an ice cream. Now, it is still not with yourself, but you get a desire. So you get a kind of a mental image happen in the mind immediately. Okay, you are eating ice cream. So it is represented in the mind. And now you won't implement it. Now you don't stop it there. Now you feel that I definitely will enjoy this. It's a really pleasurable experience. Why not implement it? Now you wake up. Now you get up from your seat. And you go to the refrigerator. And now your body is involved. The sense bases are involved. You look at the refrigerator. And you think about where the ice cream is kept. And now you get up. The body is involved. Now you are walking. The body is involved. Now you are touching the refrigerator. You are trying to open it. The body is involved. Your eyes are involved. You are opening it. Now you approach your hand to the ice cream. And you are taking it. Now your eyes are involved. And you have opened the lid. Eyes are involved. Now the smell is coming. Your nose is involved. Say you are taking a spoon and you are taking a little part to the, say, cup. Say your body is involved. Now using the spoon, now you are little by little start to enjoy. Your tongue is involved. So the all the sense bases started or activated because of that previous, very preliminary mental image happened in the mind. So this is called the Nama Rupa. Now, how this Nama Rupa comes to be? So this is where a very subtle or fairly delicate part is there. Where Buddha mentioned, it is because of the consciousness. Consciousness appear like an kind of a screen for the image to project. Like what we see in the cinema hall. So the screen is there onto which that the projected image or the light image is being projected. So the image is necessary as well as the screen is necessary. Without a screen, you can't project something, an image to something. Because the screen is the one which is reflecting. So this some whatever mechanism in order to use this reflection is should be there. So the screen does that task. On the other hand, so just the screen is not possible to show or do its task, so it requires the image. So then only it becomes a film. Just the screen is not this film. So therefore there's a sort of reciprocal relationship between the screen and the image. So likewise, when say this particular king is reflecting slowly, carefully, investigating. Now further and further his mind is sharpening, wisdom is arising. And then he understood why mind or the consciousness go and establish. So there comes the formations, there come the fabrications. There you do the constructions. So that causes the consciousness to get well established. So these are actually fairly deep parts, that is subtle aspects. And it happens, the formations, fabrications happens because of the ignorance. And as I am explained, you may understood, so this is the dependent origination. So this king recognized this dependent arising, how these each and every factor are interlinked. So they ignorance causes formations, fabrications. It causes the consciousness to get established. In order to establish, there's a name and form. Name and form sort of triggers the kind of bodily activity. The sense bases are getting activated. When they are getting activated, the contact happens. And when the contact happens, there are the feelings, pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, equanimous feelings. As the feelings happen, there is the craving. If there are pleasurable feelings, immediately mind go and attach to them. There's a craving, tanha. And when tanha, craving develops, so the mind go and establish there. You get and hang on there. The mind go and grasp that. Upadana is there. And once upadana, now you are reborn to a new state. The becoming has happened. Completely lost the present moment. Now you are in a new existence. It is not actually the entirely new life within this life also, you are again and again reborn to these kinds of mind-made states, these kinds of happy, pleasurable states, existence. And it's an ongoing process. And as it is, you are reborn to it, you can't maintain it forever. It may come to an end. And ultimately, you become dissatisfied. Sorrow, lamentation, things are happening. Now, this king started to reflect like this from ascending order to the descending order. From ascending order and then the back to the descending order. So, likewise, he is doing a very profound insight meditation here, reflecting in the ascending order and the descending order of these conditioned phenomena, causal series which are coexisting, dependently arising. And that is where he realized this theory in a way. When something exists, it causes another to happen. As a result of this arising, that also arises. And when this does not exist, that also can't exist. And as this start to exist, or as this ceases, that also ceases. So this is the principle. So as he is reflecting like this, he was able to attain Paccheka Buddhahood. And so therefore, this particular verse, even though the verse is talking about the attachment towards the sons, towards the companions, towards the friends, etc., so the reflection he did is so profound. So it has caused him to realize Paccheka Buddhahood, and this is the story and the Dhamma related to this verse. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon, and now I open the session for questions.
There's currently 6 questions, but just before I do that, I just want to make 2 small announcements. I'll just share my screen. Hopefully you can see that. So we have an electronic magazine called Mindful Seeds, and we publish submissions from both children and adults in there. And we received a poem, hopefully you can see my screen, from this group, and that was published in volume 2 of the magazine. So if you'd like to view the latest poem, which is volume 3, I'll put a link in the chat. And basically we're inviting you to make submissions to the magazine. So if you do want to put any submissions, send us an email or a chat message. And also just a general announcement, we send out an email with session timing and other relevant programs on a weekly basis. So if you aren't part of this list and you want to be, you can send an email or send us your email by a chat message, or you can email us directly at mindfulnessforyoungadults@gmail.com. And I'll put that in the chat anyway.
Probably, probably Chamila can share the link for the current publication as well, if you have.
Yes, we'll put it,
yeah.
And actually, I did have one more. Shall I just stop that share? Shall I just put it on now? That's the current one, which is volume 3. So if you click on that, you'll get the e-magazine. Also, just this is actually a question from last week. We ran out of time. And I was meant to give that question first, but I need to ask the person who asked the question. There's a part in there that doesn't make any sense. So if you can send me a message, and then I can present that. So I'll just go to the next one, question 1, general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, is it correct to say a person likes, dislikes habits and residuals are ways that Tanha expresses it to oneself? Much appreciation and merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
I didn't really get the question, Chatu. So he's asking...
Yeah, okay. I'll read it again. I don't think it's so clear. Dear Venerable Bhante, is it correct to say a person likes and the person's likes and dislikes and habits and residuals are ways that tanha expresses it to oneself. Much appreciation and merits with metta, that's it.
Yeah, we can say so, because your likes, dislikes, residues represent that inner tendencies, latent tendencies in oneself. So that is what how our behavior is sort of shown or made up. Say one person may like music, certain types of songs. Another person also may like dancing. He doesn't not like too much about the music sometimes. Another one may like sports. He doesn't like too much on the music. Another person may like, say, the reading books, novels, story books, etc. Another person is completely onto the academic side. He likes to intellectually do something. So likewise, we have various kinds of likes and dislikes. So that actually shows inner traits in a person. So these are, in a way, deeply rooted in our mind. And we have to recognize those. So basically, we are like puppets, working as puppets to those deeply rooted traits in our minds. Unknowingly, we are simply acting according to them. So they are the ones sort of motivating us. They are the ones guiding us. They are the ones appear like a partner to us. And they are always asking to do this, do that, do this, do that. You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. You should do this. You should do this. So every time, someone is always instructing us. So that instruction, that volition, is depending on our habitual tendencies or latent tendencies, our inner traits, deeply rooted traits. So those are the ones we need to clearly recognize, how the mind is conditioned onto a particular way of thinking, only a particular way of responding. Someone is responding in one manner and another is responding in a different manner. So all these are very much like preconditioned. So we got to decode that preconditioning. So this is in a way how Buddha deeply going to the deeper layers or deeper levels of the mind. So he does not stop at the surface level. He understood these are the potentialities available in the mind, deeply rooted. And they are the ones, the cogwheels, actually operating the whole machine. So you go and dismantle those cogwheels. And that is where the vipassana is quite interesting. So in order to do that, you need to have fairly unattached, unassociated, non-grasping state of mind. So that is fairly unconditioned. And that with respect to that unconditioned mind, you got to recognize the conditioned mind. Suppose you are able to maintain a simple, unattached, unassociated, unbound kind of a mind. So fine. But you can't maintain it. Why? So again and again, that deeply rooted traits are coming and operating, coming and bugging you, coming and telling you to do this, do that, do this, do that. So there you got to be skillful to recognize that. Say for example, so these days, so one of my friend has triggered my mind traits into installing Linux. So now my mind is asking to do that. I was thinking, why all of a sudden my mind has come into this? So all of these years, I was not doing that much of thing. I am happy with this windows. But now my friend has triggered some button in the mind. Now I am trying to get Linux onto my machine. So why this trait is there? So likewise, we have some interesting traits in our mind. I mean, they are deeply rooted. I didn't know that I liked that too much. Actually, I also not really use that heavily, but something is there. I don't know why. So likewise, you also may have some quite interesting, compelling kind of desires available in the mind. So you are unknowingly being compelled to do something. So there, if we can stop and check how the mind getting enslaved to that's kind of a deeply rooted desire. So quite interesting. So you have to be fairly grounded to do that, have to be fairly humble to do that, no point of justifying that. Rather, we have to honestly recognize that. Then we may understand if it is necessary, of course, we can mindfully implement it. Doesn't matter. Not as being a slave to it, rather recognizing the benefit that you may be doing it. Instead of that, if you are simply going and implementing it, it's a matter of you being a slave to that desire. That desire is based on that deeply rooted tendency or the trait. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 6. This is a general question. Venerable Bhante, I don't want to take too much time on a general question like this, but is there any advice on making a decision, either big or small, without the fear and associated stress of making a wrong decision? Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Again, I didn't understand the question, Chatur.
Okay. basically what they ask is, when you're making a decision, small or big decision, how do you do it without the fear and associated stress of making a wrong decision? I think that's what they're asking.
So if I rephrase the question, so he's asking, if we are making a wrong decision, is it based on the fear and the stress? Am I rephrasing it?
I think what they say is, like, if you're making a decision, how do you do that decision without fear and stress for getting it wrong, I guess. I think that's what they mean.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we interpret in the Buddhist terms, in the Buddha's teaching, actually, there Buddha mentioned that people are taking wrong decisions based on certain components, based on certain attributes. One is the fear. Say, if suppose you are fearful on someone, say he is the boss and he is the, say, the master, and so you are so afraid of him, as a result of that, you take a decision. Say, he is asking you to do something wrong. So you are so afraid of him. So as a result of that, you take a decision, okay, I have to simply obey him, because I am quite afraid of him, and you go and implement something wrong maybe. So the decision is based on the fear. And then Buddha mentioned that you may take a decision based on the affection, that you are sort of doing some favorism to someone. There are a couple of people are available, and suppose, I am just giving you an example, suppose there is an interview, and there are many people appear in the interview, and even though there are many people and your eye has gone to a particular person just because of his or her appearance, then you have a kind of an affection, have a kind of a desire, attachment towards that person, and you go and give the appointment to him or her. So there the decision is based on the affection or the desire. So chanda, that is the desire, and you have kind of a bias decision, which is this bias has come because of that affection, that favorism. And there's another category Buddha mentioned, that is based on the delusion. So you didn't properly understand the situation, so you take a decision based on the delusion. You didn't analyze it properly, you didn't understand the causes and conditions properly, you didn't go to real whole picture, you didn't see the big picture, but you have simply taken a decision based on ignorance. So likewise, Buddha mentioned chanda, dosa, bhaya, moha. Dosa is the other part where you take a decision based on the hatred. And someone, suppose that you don't like some person, so you simply cut him off. Say there's a promotion has to be given, and you don't like a particular person, so you don't give the promotion to him. Why not? Why are you going to do it? Because he is your enemy. Because you have, even though he has all the qualifications, even though he has done enough, he's quite qualified to promote, but you are not taking the decision because you don't like him. You hate him. So therefore Buddha mentioned, based on hate, people are taking decisions. So likewise Buddha mentioned, these are the agati, or coming to the biased kind of a situation, you are not taking the proper decision because your mind being biased. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 6. This is Mindful City. Dear Bhante, thank you for this program and your valuable guidance to improve our mindfulness practice. This is regarding my sitting practice, which is now settled to a regular 1 hour practice most of the day. I have submitted several reports during the past and received your guidance adequately. Due to continuous practice, I have a good understanding now to distinguish between being mindful and being in one pointed desk concentration. This is not a precise theoretical understanding, but a feeling or knowing I have. When concentration is building up, I sense it during my sitting. When mindfulness spreads across the whole spacious space, incorporating all the objects, including thoughts, I sense and feel it. Sometimes when I realize my one-pointedness is not available for some time, I tend to focus on one object and let it build. Is this something we can come across? Is this something we come across during the practice one day? I don't know if it is the right understanding. I feel like it is possible to mix and balance mindfulness and concentration and distinguish them separately. Much merits for your comments and advice. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, basically, so we can concentrate and focus to a particular very minute kind of a behavior, minute kind of a object, and that is one aspect of mindfulness where the concentration becomes foremost. And on the other hand, you can get the big picture, the whole picture, and that is also part of mindfulness. So both parts are necessary, both parts are there in the practice. So certain times you get the this microscopic kind of a focus, and you observe very minute details. On the other hand, certain other times you step back and see the big picture and how the whole system is working. So both are there.
Question number 4 of 7, general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, what does it mean by dipti? Are these individual beliefs? How do these get cultivated? Much appreciation and merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
So dipti, typically called as views, various kinds of views. So you use, actually your mind doesn't immediately come to the ditti. It starts with a kind of a sign, a mark appear in the mind. Say for example, how to explain? Say, how to explain it? Say you... You take a kind of a person, and from the first sight, suppose you get kind of a pleasurable feeling. So you have seen someone, and with that sight, that there's a pleasure arise. And that signs are quite agreeable, and they are sort of making your mind happy. And so again and again, you are looking at all these signs with a mind with desire, with a mind with the kind of a, say what to say, that you can gain lot of happiness through this sight, you can gain lot of pleasure using this sight. So again and again, so you are looking at him or you are looking at her because it is generating some happiness. So you expect now to be more and more happy and to have pleasure. And now that perception, where the recognition has happened, okay, this is beautiful. So she is beautiful, he is handsome. So likewise this, so you are looking at this person with the attitude of beauty. Attitude of beauty. Now this attitude of beauty further and further improves. And now you start to think. Now, first, actually, you recognize, okay, she's a beautiful girl. He's a handsome boy. So, likewise, you give a lot of value to that picture, to that sight, and that is how you recognized. And you don't stop there. you start to think about it. You are thinking again, again and thinking, and while walking you are thinking, while traveling you are thinking, while eating you are thinking. Now your thinking being fairly conditioned that this person is a really good person. This person is a really valuable person. This person should be a person that I should associate. Now your mind is slowly conditioning. So this is the mind level or the chitta level. And as you are further and further thinking, now you can't change it. Now your mind is extremely conditioned and assume that someone else coming and telling you, no, she is not a good person. No, he is not a good person. But you can't accept it. You simply go and even go to an argument because your mind is fairly conditioned now, fairly programmed now to think in a certain manner. Now this is where the mind is come to the view level, ditti, and that is the last level where your mind is fairly firm on a particular way of thinking. So therefore Buddha gives such a kind of a very beautiful analysis how these ditti or views are developed. So it starts with the perception, sanya, and then it go develop to the level of the chitta, the mind, and then it go and develop to the ditti, the view. So once such a view is there, so you are firmly established there. So you have grasped that particular way of thinking. Your mind is so narrow down to that way of thinking. It is hardly or rather deeply rooted to the mind. So this is how Buddha explains how ditti actually arises. And this is the stepwise process, gradual process that Buddha explained.
Question number 5. This is a general question, but I might have to give it to Auntie to read out. Please.
Okay, Sainasa, this has a Pali stanza, so That's why Chatu is giving it to me. So I will just share it with Sainasa anyway. I don't want to try to read the Pali.
So you have to go to a Pali class now.
So this is actually, the question is, dear Swaminarayan, it's regarding Mahaparinibbana Sutta.
Uh-huh.
So it says, dear Swaminarayan, in Mahaparinibbana Sutta, we come across that the Blessed One exclusively mentions about clear comprehension instead of mindfulness when it comes to a different body posture and day-to-day activities. So,
uh-huh.
I'm just sharing it with
the answer. So, what is the Pali part? That is also interesting.
Katanya Bhikkhave Bhikkhu.
Ah, right, okay, I can.
The Bhikkhave Bhikkhu.
Yeah, okay, fine. So, this is the Sampajanya Pabba. Actually, this is available not only in the Pranidibbana Sutta. If you refer Satipatthana Sutta, there also you take this part. Now, Satipatthana Sutta very clearly mentioned, you start with sati in a way. First you got to establish mindfulness, and once the mindfulness is established, you have to expand it, you have to enhance it, you have to develop it to various other aspects of the daily activities. Now this is what explained in the Sampajanya Pabba in Satipatthana Sutta Kayanupassana. First actually you are establishing mindfulness, and once the mindfulness is established, you need to grow, expand, develop it to various other activities. Like here Buddha mentioned, say, alokite vilokite sampajanakari hoti, that when you are looking front, you are maintaining mindfulness, you are being mindful. When you are looking sides, you are being mindful. And abhikkante patikkante, when you are going forward, you are mindful. When you are coming back, you are mindful. Then alokite vilokite, samminjite pasarite, when you are stretching your arms, limbs, you are mindful. When you are bending your arms, you are mindful. Then sangati patta chivara dharani. So referring to the monks, so they have the single robes and the double robes, and they are having the ball, and whenever they are using those balls, robes, so they have to be mindful. And in terms of the lay people, say when you are using your clothes, when you are wearing your clothes, so you have to be mindful. Asite pite kaite saite sampajanakari hoti. when you are eating, when you are drinking, there also you have to be mindful. Ucchara passava kamme sampajanakari hoti. When you are urinating, defecating, there also one has to be mindful. Gate tite nisinne sutte jagrite basite tunhi bhave sampajanakari hoti. So as you are walking, as you are standing, as you are sitting, as you are lying down, and when you are awake, when you are talking, when you are being silent, you got to be mindful. Evam ko bhikkave bhikkhu sampajano hoti sato bhikkave bhikkhu viharayya sampajano ayango vammahakam anusasa niti. So sato sampajano, so the two terms are now combined, we are sati sampajanya. So first actually we got to be mindful in the sense that your mind is now operating in the present moment, and that only is not enough. Now you got to expand it with the clear comprehension. So then you have the combined task, sati and the sampajanya, mindfulness and clear comprehension. So that together has the path. Mindfulness is the prerequisite, and once you have mindfulness well established, you should not stop there. You got to go to the clear comprehension, and that is the seed of the wisdom. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 7, general question. Bhante, related to Dhamma sermon and the reflection of the situation of Yoniso Manasikara, is this purely a thinking process using mind verbalization, or something felt in the heart, or kind of an insight or understanding? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, it may be both actually. So first actually you need to, in order to have this kind of a deep understanding, first you got to do a kind of mental reflection as well. Actually, it may start with some gross forms. Like say for example, when you are in a sorrowful situation, so you already have some gross sorrow available in the mind, and you can look back and see what is the reason. And there probably you may understand, okay, there is a sorrow has arisen because of some sort of an attachment, some sort of a grasping. So likewise, some gross answers are available. So that may actually has some thinking, of course. The intellectual reflection is there. But at the same time, you have to feel yourself. It is not a kind of an imaginative result. Rather, you got to reflect to your own heart. Reflect to your own mind and see what is the exact reason. So the wise reflection is also there, and the internal reflection is also there. And as you are moving forward, then more and more subtle causes and conditions are there. As I mentioned, say how to come to the, say, the six sense bases and their corresponding objects, and how the contact is causing them, how the how the contact making the feelings, and how the sense bases are making the contact, and how the name and form making the sense bases. So likewise, now we are going to more and more deeper levels, so that you can't do simply with the mental reflection, verbalization. That requires fair amount of calm insights, vipassana practice, in order to go to that level. And you can't simply, I mean, you can of course read a book and logically understand the process, but it is not enough.
Question number 7, this is the last one. General question. Dear Bhante, like, this is in regard to that question about Linux. Like open source software like Linux and disliking commercial software like Windows seems like a subtle way of liking and disliking deeply rooted within us. Can we categorize these very subtle liking and dislikings as manipulation of Dhanta as well? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I also think so, because when we are using a particular thing for a long time, I mean, we get fed up of it and we get bored of it, and mind may like to have kind of explore something else. And this is actually in a way a kind of manifestation of karma tanha. So, because we like the difference. So we can't simply maintain a monotony. So mind get bored. and we are in search of something something different. So this is a deeply rooted karma tanha in a way. And so now you are imagining, okay, why not I am going to Linux? So I am I always strict onto Windows. I mean, you can apply to your own context. So you have a particular, say, car, and someone else is driving a different model, different brand. So you may get a desire immediately, okay, why don't I sort of sell my car and get that car? So you can apply to that. So now you are imagining, okay, now I am going to drive, say, that type of a car. And now you are thinking about it, you are imagining about it. What are the goods and advantages? What are the benefits? Now you go and explore, you do the browsing, all sorts of things, and you are going through the manuals and all these things. So maybe every time now when the mind has taken such approach, so there are many positive reasons for you to go to the new option. So the available option, available thing is now obsolete. I mean, it is not good. So why don't you go to the new car? So very difficult to now understand why you are being driven by that desire. So that is how the mind is operating. So they are, actually we become really fools. So we become really driven by these desires. So desires know how to manipulate us. So they internally being there and they manipulate us, and we are like fools simply going after this and that, and now we are going and buying the new car. And after some time, actually, it also become obsolete. Now the company prepares a new one, a new model, and they advertise that with a beautiful girl and, you know, various many different ways. And now you got a desire to go for that car. So this is how, I mean, the desires are sort of taking us for a ride. Yeah.
Okay, just one second. I think there might be another question coming. Let me just have a look. It's a comment. Dear Venerable Bhante, thank you so much and much appreciation for today's Dhamma talk and explanation on questions. I found answers to my practice today and it was truly healing. Thank you so much and much merits for all Venerables.
Yeah, then one Sunday.
So with that, I'd like to end the program. And usually I just pass merits and give my thanks to Bhante, but there was another comment that came in, so I might just read that out. Great Reverend Sir, may you have the greatest strength and courage to share valuable Dhamma messages to our group and the world. May the Triple Gem bless you. Thank you, team, for your great work. That's the end. So, with that, I'd like to end the program. Teruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sarnai. Sukhi Hotu.